Intelligent media for the politically aware.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
On Instagram at Spaced Out Radio Show. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you, including rocking out to Bumblefoot and reading up on Captain Shirk's SOR Newswire. Tonight's show is brought to you by Chive Charities. Help make the world 10% happier by visiting Chive Charities today. You can find them on our website. Well, he's back, ladies and gentlemen, as the first week of every new month, we bring in our Keith Andrews of the ET Connection. We all jump aboard the Woo train and let Keith take us to places we didn't know existed. Keith is a lifelong experiencer who now helps counsel those who are experiencers themselves, trying to ask and answer those questions that everyone wants to know, namely, why me? Now, this show is a little bit different. If you're tuning in for the first time, we do deal with a lot of audience participation. So if you're in one of our chat rooms or on Twitter, make sure you post your questions in capital letters. I will get them to Keith. Keith, what's going on, man?
Mind you, that's what we get for being stuck in the middle of a heat wave.
It has been hot. You know what? I took a drive around our area this evening before the show, and east and southeast of me, I counted 7 forest fires, including one that had just started southeast of me. And as we were driving, the fire trucks were passing us on the other side, racing to that one. And a couple of them, about 4 of them, are absolutely massive. Thank goodness, no danger to where I am at SOR headquarters just yet. But as we've said ever since 2017, when the big fires happened here, you know, the big fires back then hit north, west, and south. This time it's south and east that are getting hit. And, you know, man, just seeing all that forest fire smoke in the sky, man, just absolutely driving me nuts. It's so sad.
Well, let's face it, it's been harsh on a lot of people. I mean, we finally broke the barrier and come back down again. Like this morning, we woke up and it was only like 20 degrees out, which was such a nice change.
Tell me about it. It's so much easier to breathe, man. Like for our American listeners who are in those hot areas, we're not used to this up here.
I mean, it'll get, you know, it'll get, a hot day is, you know, 38, 39 degrees. That's about 100 degrees. But when you start getting into the 102, 105, 106, 121, we're just not used to that. Even where you are, Keith, right in the middle of the desert in Kelowna, British Columbia.
Yeah, we are normally, I mean, it's quite normal here at this time of year to get into 33, 35, but this issue of getting into 44, no.
Right.
Of course, the other thing to keep in mind for the, for those of you that don't know Celsius, that puts us at about 110.
Hotter. Hotter.
Oh, yeah. It's just insane.
Yeah. How do the aliens like the heat?
Well, that depends on which ones. Most of them are a lot more adjusted to it. Of course, they've got working air conditioning for the most part.
Well, that's nice.
But if you watch the bigger fires, you might even get to see an elemental down there. It's got to be one heck of a hot fire for that one, for them to come through, though.
I bet. I bet. Well, let's ask you, how have you been for ET contact recently?
It's been intriguing. You know, there's a lot of chatter going on about what happens now that things are starting to, now that the pandemic is slowly being moved into the back burner. Right. There's a lot of question from them about how people are going to react to it. You know, to what humans are calling the new world. And realistically, it's not a new world. You know, but they are fascinated by the amount that people are, and by the varied way that people are reacting to it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because humans have a tendency of reacting in a very disconnected fashion. You know, when you take a look at the Talons, when they run into a fire, they literally will sacrifice each other in order for the colony to survive. Right. I mean, it's funny, if you're looking to understand Talons, watch the way that fire ants, that the army ants in South America work, right? And you'll see basically the same idea. You know, but humans have such an erratic approach that the off-worlders are looking at it going, how do they function as a society, much less how do they thrive? Which is what concerns them where it comes to space exploration. Because mankind has a real neat tendency of taking the most logical approach to things, throwing it right out the window, and still succeeding. Or in the case of space travel, right out the airlock.
Very true. Very true. So, you know, right now with everything that's going on the planet, the pandemic, lots of fires here around, not only British Columbia, but North America as well. You know, you have water bombers are flying over right now. You have a lot going on around the world, and there's all this talk about UFO disclosure happening. How are the ETs reacting? Because my focus for you tonight is about who wants disclosure. Is it humans or is it the extraterrestrials? And that's what I actually wanted to get in with you tonight.
Quite frankly, it's the humans that want it. The off-worlders have a very definitive outlook that full disclosure is not a wise move. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Okay, but their biggest concern is that human society has evolved in such a fashion that acknowledging the off-worlders would in all likelihood create a staggering amount of cross-current. And then we're not just talking amongst the people that believe in UFOs and the ones that don't. We're talking about the entire culture is built on essentially denial. Which is really neat when you look at the people that have experienced it. I mean, let's face it. None of us that have experienced it are sitting here going, are we alone? Right. But the off-worlders are looking at it going, the one complaint that I get from a number of them, especially the Chitawari, which aren't actually off-worlders, but the one argument I get a lot of is how can humans sit there and say that we as reptilians, as the umbrella group, want to take over the world? You know, want to bother wasting time with the political system? You know, I was talking to one of the military advisors, and they went, if we wanted to take over them and their political system, why would we bother infiltrating them? Why not just wipe out the leaders and just take over? You know, and according to them, the way they put it was the whole idea of infiltrating a political system in order to take a planet out just doesn't add up to a whole lot of functional time. It's a waste of resource for them.
All right, let's get right to audience questions here. Jeff is asking, or he's making a comment here. He says, hope and hugs to Canada that these fires get under control by the brave men and women fighting it. Absolutely. They are incredible what they are doing up here. And, you know, every day from like dawn until dusk, the airplanes are coming on in and they are bombing the heck out of all of these fires. And never mind the brave souls who are on the ground doing the real boots on the ground dirty work. But, man, they are tough. They are tough. Absolutely, Jeff. And we send lots of love and prayers to all of them as well. Let's get to, a question here from Starflower. Welcome to the show, Starflower. In human history, has ancient humans interacted with off-worlders to fuel this idea that you just mentioned, Keith?
Humans have kind of, well, technically the answer would be, I suspect, yes. When you think that the Norse gods, were the Nordic people. You know, the thing was, and that's why all of a sudden the Norse gods just all of a sudden vanished. But the reality of it is, did they come in and say, you know, let's take over the world? That was brought about quite literally in the late 70s, early 80s by a movie concoction called V. That's where that whole thing rooted. Which is why the reptilians are always targeted as the ones trying to take over the world.
Well, that would make sense. That would make sense. Eulalio is asking, I thought their supernatural powers would have them adjust for any type of weather. Right now in New Mexico, it has rain for 2 weeks from the last 2 weeks of June until now. I give praise to the firefighters. Oh, yes, that's for the firefighters as well. Yes, good energy for them. Good energy for them, absolutely. We need that. Keith, for you, when you are looking at and getting in communication with extraterrestrial species, especially around the time where they are a hot topic, probably the hottest topic ever in the history of ufology right now over the last couple of months, you know, when they come down, do they even know what's going on?
Oh, the answer there is yes. You know, and you and I discussed this quite some time ago, Dave, but they watch shows like Spaced Out Radio to keep an eye on to keep a finger on the pulse of the common populace. They don't pay a whole lot of attention to the government, right? Because the government doesn't tend to give the information in the first place. But they certainly keep an eye on what's going on. To see how the common humans, if you will, are responding.
Well, what's their opinion so far?
It's erratic. And they're still trying to figure out how humans even are surviving. Like, what they don't get is how, with the amount of conflict, how mankind managed to get through the last 2 years specifically. Amazingly enough, whoever put that way, the reality of it is they keep a very close eye on how people are interacting. But before people ask, are they going to come down and put out the fires? Not unless Esau directly says, I need help. Esau being, by the way, who you call Gaia or Mother Earth.
Right. All right. Let's go to Chuck's question. Are the aliens heating us up on purpose, Keith, or is it just us stupid humans?
The answer is no to either. The aliens aren't doing it to start with, and although humans are polluting the place and it's not helping things, they are not the cause for the warming. Okay, they, you know, what is happening is Earth itself is just simply going through a normal cycle.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
You know, I mean, granted, it's about 10,000 years overdue, according to human calculation. According to her, it's right on schedule.
All right, let's get to another one. This one from Mr. Fake. If they, the aliens, made us or even just abducted and cloned us to study our clones, do you think they have humans living somewhere else other than Earth, like a backup, just in case we blow ourselves up?
Well, we sort of have to cover that in a few different sections. Number one, technically, it wasn't aliens that made us. It wasn't humans were an enhancement, but they were not they're only technically alien in as much as they got here after the planet did. But there is a race that is older than man that was directly responsible for it. Okay, but they did, and they, in answer to the question, do they have a backup? Number one, this isn't a petri dish, so the answer to the first part of that would be no. But are there humans on other planets? Yeah. Mobius itself is a colony of Earth. About 40,000 years ago, mankind left Earth and ended up on, you know, they left Earth and ended up on Mobius, which is on the other side of the sun. But mankind will never see Mobius from Earth because it's in the exact same orbit and speed as the Earth itself.
Okay. Let's go to Oumuamua. Would they allow or prevent us from nuking each other?
In small amounts, no. In small amounts, if you want to wipe out a city with a nuke, they don't care. If it's going to go to nuclear, to global nuclear devastation, they'll shut it down. Because at that point, it destroys the library. Their concern is the planet, not the humans.
I can see that. I can totally see that. You know, why don't they care about the species?
Because the species is a blink. The species is only a couple million years old. The planet is about 4.5 billion years old. Okay, boiling down to something in the neighborhood, my math right now is not doing great, but probably about 4,000 times as old as what mankind is. You know, so man doesn't really matter to them from that standpoint. I mean, it matters in as much as humans are the caretakers. But if the caretakers decide to commit suicide, other caretakers will evolve. And until then, the off-worlders will step in to help. Kind of like in the old days when the king was killed, a steward would step in to take care of the crown prince until the crown prince got old enough.
True. YJ is asking, is the warming because our magnetosphere has dwindled?
Partly. Okay, again, that's part of the standard cycle. The magnetosphere actually, it does fluctuate. And as it weakens, it ends up turning around. Like as the magnetosphere weakens, the temperature rises. But what ends up happening is that then the magnetosphere restabilizes itself and the temperature drops back down to a functional level. Ironically, it's actually the negativity that humans are building that is causing more damage than the pollution.
All right. I would agree with you on that. But I also agree that every now and then Mother Nature gets really pissed off at us and decides to, you know, clean house, so to speak, a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah. All right.
Absolutely.
Joe, who has very nice hair, is asking, are the Mobians aware of us?
Absolutely. I've seen them come by periodically. Oh. You know, they actually have regular visits, if you will.
Do you invite them in for tea?
No, I don't like tea. Coffee, but I'm just not a tea drinker, so I don't keep the stuff in the house.
All right. Husky is asking, How old is Big Carl, Dave's sexy alien friend with benefits? How old's Carl, Keith?
If I remember correctly, I mean, I don't usually bother with asking how old they are, but I believe he's pushing about 2,500 years.
Oh, nice. He's an old bastard.
He is. And he still hasn't figured out he's supposed to follow the rules.
When's he coming back? I'm getting a little tired. Not getting any action.
That is an excellent question. I like it.
Well, I'm hoping you'll answer it because I kind of need that to make a radio show here.
That's something I'm going to have to see what I can do about pulling that off. But that just means I got to make a trip out to Zeta Reticuli and see if I can undo what he did.
You pull away, buddy. You pull away.
It just means I got to make a trip out to Zeta Reticuli and see if we can explain exactly why he did what he did.
I'm sure he'll figure it out. I'm sure he will. Minister Elaine, who we absolutely love and adore around here, she is asking, who are the aliens that Admiral Byrd encountered? Now,
I'm going to have to plead ignorance because I don't even know the description of what Admiral Byrd worked with.
Well, Admiral Byrd, we'll find it here for you to get a proper definition. He was an American naval officer, recipient of the Medal of Honor. And he really did a lot of work navigating around the Arctic and Atlantic Oceans and the Antarctic Plateau. Many believe that he did have some sort of ET contact in Antarctica.
Oh, that makes it relatively easy. Just about 100,000 people that he could have run into. But, but if we're looking at the off-worlders, the odds are he's likely looking at Lycan. Did he give any sort of a description of the people that he was dealing with? Because as you yourself know, Dave, a lot of the races I don't know by the current names.
We'll find out. Maybe Minister Elaine knows a little bit more about that. She can type it in our chat room. Alien Critter, welcome to the show, is asking, are there any bipedal shark-headed aliens out there?
Bipedal, no. Not that I'm aware of. But there are waterborne ones. Like, they don't walk upright. They will if they have to come on land, but they, on the whole, stay in the water.
Great. So another planet I'm not going to.
That's this one.
They don't walk on our land.
I said they may. But no, what we see here usually is them in the water.
Yes. Yes. All right. We got time for one more 30 seconds here. Let's go to Mennonite Abe, who is asking, do aliens play video games?
Well, they call them video games. We call them interstellar combat. You know, the funny, I mean, the mechanism is basically the same. You shoot the spin, you shoot the other guy's ship, and it blows up. Problem is, they use ones with real people in them.
Oh, nice. Keith, I'm going to get you to hold on right there because we have turned up the woo from 7 to 8 to 9. And now let's get to that peak of 10 out of 10 for the big woo tonight. Our Keith Andrews is here for the ET Connection. Keith comes in the first week of every new month to talk about ET contact. We love him around here. We'll be back with more R. Keith Andrews of the ET Connection right after this. Solid start so far.
Yeah, it's an interesting... I mean, I love the interaction we get.
Me too, man. Me too! Here. That'll be our next question right there. Oh, if you could do 6 or 7 lines of blow with an alien race a few times a week, which would you choose? Why? Do they like to party hard? Oh, God, I'll let you answer that one during the break and not during the radio show. Which aliens are you doing blow with, Keith?
I won't touch the stuff. I did long enough. I did enough of it on my own. I ain't about to go back to it.
All right. All right. Break M's question. The heart of that question. All right. The Husky has apparently visited Zeta Practiculi. Very nice. Barther, you're on fire tonight. You are on fire. Big Fat Creep, how you doing? Good to see you. Let's see, who else we got? Stetson John, nice to have you here. Oh, Admiral Byrd apparently ran into tall, blonde, blue-eyed aliens.
Oh, Mount Eberron's.
Hello, Sean. Caleb Gardner, welcome to the show. Major Lee, thanks for coming on in. And Robert Mobley, good to have you here. Cashew, nice to have you here. Thank you for joining us. And let's see, who else is here? Let's see here. Evil Carl with another super chat. Another evil super chat. Thank you so much, Evil Carl. Really do appreciate that. Thank you, Michael, for kicking off the super chat tonight. Bonjour, Julien. Comment ça va? People, don't mind Husky Travel Boy in the chat room tonight. He is just very upset that his Montreal, or Les Canadiens du Montréal, are down 3-0 to the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup playoffs. All right, he's a little pissy right now. Opa de Greco, how are you? And let's see, who else has jumped on in here? Oh, Lon Strickler, I can't wait to have you on. You're on soon. Let me check my calendar here. Well, look at that. Lon Strickler's on Monday. Look at that. Lon effin Strickler here on Monday. I will have to have my beard in perfect shape for him. And Jerry O'Brien, nice to see you. The stunning and talented Kira, welcome to the show. Richard Elmore, nice to have you here. Stone Hobbit, you're looking beautiful tonight. Let's see here. Definitely not FBI. Welcome to the show. Are you NSA or NRO? Let us know. Maybe CIA? That'd be kind of cool. Come say hello. Rob Aggs, welcome to the show again. A double hello to you. NP, nice to see you here. North Star, welcome. Back to the top here. I missed some. Everyone, I'm going to tell you right now, I did miss some questions. I did. I apologize. Please, if I haven't read your question, please type your question in capital letters, except for you, Bart. And I will get to them and kind of go from there as I'm scrolling on down, making sure I'm catching up. No, Bart, it's not true. It's not true. That's bad. Bad Barther. You know, just because your team forgot how to score goals, don't take it out on me, man. 20 seconds here. And let's see. A great way to support this show is by hitting that subscribe button. We're almost at 13,000 or 12,700. Let's make that happen. Thank you to the Super Chat as well. Here we go. Second half hour of Spaced Out Radio is now underway. My name is Dave Scott. Appreciate you tuning us in wherever you are on this beautiful planet we call Earth. I want to remind you that if you've missed portions of this show or others, check out our free archives by going to youtube.com/spacedoutradio. Do me the favor, hit that subscribe button. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you, including rocking out to Bumblefoot and reading up on Captain Shirk's SOR Newswire. Follow us on Twitter at Spaced Out Radio and on Instagram, Spaced Out Radio Show. We continue on with R. Keith Andrews and the ET Connection tonight. We're going to go straight to audience questions. Nikki is asking, Keith, which races of ETs are shapeshifters?
I was gonna say the amoeboids, which are, it's just the name of them, because there are very few that are actually shapeshifters, hence why I keep this book handy. Because I can't keep track of the name. I can't keep track of the names of people, never mind everything else. So I just write the whole nine yards down. But the most of what people think are shapeshifters, some have technology, but most are not. There's only one race that is full-blown shapeshift. And we are just looking for exactly what the name of them actually is. And where the heck are we? No, that won't work. Yeah, I would love to give you the names right off the top of my head, but unfortunately that becomes a bit of a problem for me half the time. And I wish I could give you a definite. But I'll keep looking for that, and I'll give you the definitive answer in a minute. But they are essentially 160-pound amoeboid, meaning they don't have a physical body.
All right. Let's move on to Jenny's question here. Which group of aliens are abducting people and why?
Well, I'm going to answer the first question first, then I'll get to the other one. The amoeboid, the ones I called amoeboid, those are Korloks.
Okay.
And to give you an idea, do you remember the show 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Never saw it.
You really should. That shows you a Korlok ship. Well, but the answer to the other question they were dealing with, as far as which race is abducting humans and why, well, which race isn't would be a shorter list. And the why is just about as varied as the number of different scientific search pods that they've got out. It's kind of like asking what a human's researching in the medical labs. You know, they are going after everything from evolutionary modifications to societal implications of an atmospheric alteration. Although I will tell you, the Martokians are not happy with certain things that are going on right now. You know, humans are talking about colonizing Mars, which is kind of along the same lines of saying, let's go invade another planet. But I mean, the Greys are abducting people for the hybridization program. Techlecs are abducting a few people for dinner. And by the way, that's not as in let's take them out for a party that the humans are going to like.
All right, let's move on to Travis's question. You mentioned elementals earlier. Can you explain further?
Yeah. Elementals are another race that literally are made up of the elements. There are three types of elementals. Earth elementals, which have a tendency of causing earthquakes or attending the area when they happen. Okay, then you've got your fire elementals. Well, fire elementals are living fire. And you need a pretty fair-sized fire for them to show up. Okay, because I mean, basically what they do is they show up and they participate in the fire because that's how they eat, by consuming things. And as soon as you have a decent forest fire here, they can come in, grab a snack, and have no problem. You know, nobody worries about them because they come in, they're right smack in the middle of the fire. Everybody gets worried about the fire itself. The elemental comes and goes as he wants. You know, and then, of course, you've got your it depends on who you ask whether they're water elementals or they're air elementals. Okay, but they're both the same element. So it sort of depends on the density of them at the time. Like, you'll find, like, especially when you get into the, like, your little dust devils and twisters, quite often that's an air elemental popping into the area just to take a little look. Right? Or you get into the water spout, the little water spout, same idea. It's called rambunctious children.
Valro is asking, which alien race is from around Catalina Island in California, and are they flying the transmedium craft?
Down in Catalina, you know, as far as that goes, if we're telling the underwater, that would be the merfolk. But they don't fly craft above the surface. Okay, you might be looking at Radio Command, depending on which ships, because there's a few different ones down there. But I'm curious on the term transmedia.
That's what they're calling shape-shifting craft.
Okay.
The government is, the U.S. government.
Oh. That's the mechlinoids.
The mechlinoids.
And they are literally, and the craft, by the way, are not craft. They're mechlinoids. They are mechanical shapeshifters.
Are they piloted?
No. A little hard to pilot something. It's kind of like asking if your arm is piloted.
Okay, so they're transformers, more than meets the eye.
For lack of a better way of putting it, yes.
Are they Decepticons or Autobots?
That depends. Are you going to shoot at them and ask them if they're friendly?
I'm not doing it. I'll leave that for Uncle Dale and his power stash. All right. Starflower is asking, do aliens have social media accounts on their planet and on Earth? How does it work, if so?
First of all, as far as social media goes, it depends entirely on the race. But on the whole, it's not a social media. It is simply a global or a ship-wide network. Okay, because what they do is they deal with biomagnetic source coding, which means essentially it's kind of like thumbprint, right? The moment you log in, you don't have an account any more than in Canada. We have a SIN, basically in Canada you have a SIN number, in the States you have a social security number, same idea. But you don't have to have a specific account. The fact is that the electronics are up and running. All you have to do is access a comm panel. Now, if you're dealing with the Mobians, they don't have one at all because they're telepathically connected. So they don't rely on electronics.
All right, let's move on. Let's go to Michael's question. Which race flies liquid ships?
Well, we do know the Odina can, or not the Odina, rather, the Korlock can. Okay, but your elementals are more often than not the ones that he's referring to. Oh, and the... Which ones are they now? I'm trying to remember what the heck they're called. There is a race that actually, they don't run a liquid ship, they grow the dang things. You know... But what people are calling liquid ships, the mechlinoids, again, you might mistake it as a media, as a liquid ship, because it adjusts to form depending on what the atmosphere is that they're dealing with. You know, that's where it becomes an interesting setup. See, the Archon, as they evolve, are living ships, but they're not liquid. They're biological.
Uncle Dale is asking, please describe the mass media or entertainment media of the various races.
The simplest answer is biomagnetic holographic interface. Basically, the easiest way to look at it is if you watch any of the Marvel shows that show you Iron Man, what they depict on Iron Man. That is essentially the way their computers work, with the added advantage of you can redesign the computer on the fly.
Okay. And they use that for communication? Do they have their own? Do they have their own Channel 7 news team on board?
No, you don't require a news team when you're completely linked with the entire population via the network.
So they have their own ANN, Alien News Network.
Well, they don't call it alien because you got to remember they're from there.
Okay.
You know, but again, humans have a news network because humans can't get like most people in Canada can't just pop over to Australia and see what's going on.
Right.
Right. In many of these races' cases, because of the way their entire network works, all you have to do is just log into your local toaster and you'll know what's happening in the south end of the world.
Travis is asking, can you please explain what elementals are and what they do?
Now, that would take a very long time.
Well, give us a break here. We got a few minutes.
In a nutshell, elementals are entities that do not have physical form. They are composed of the basic elements and semi-elements, much like Earth. Okay, as in air, water, earth, electricity, magma, shadow, light. I mean, these are all different types of elementals. And they interact and reproduce just like, I was going to say just like everything else of that caliber. Basically, sorry. I believe it's called mitosis, if I remember correctly. As in, they don't have partners. They literally simply replicate. Like the Korlok. When the Korlok reach a certain age, they simply split. And ultimately, I mean, what they do is they've got their entire own society. Right. But they are basically, they run most of them on a matriarchal society. Except the combat side of things, which is done on a patriarchal basis. In other words, the females run the society as in, we'll build or we'll lay out the social structure. Males, you go out and do the enforcing.
All right. Let's get to Jules' question. What do off-worlders think about World UFO Day?
Well, they don't have any functional use for it. You know, what they can't figure out is by the word that people use UFO to mean, they don't understand why everybody doesn't just automatically accept the fact that it's there. You know, why do you have it? What they keep asking is, why do you have a day that you focus on the unknown, on the unknowns? Okay, it's not just one day of the day. That was a blunt way to put it. It's not just one day of the year that humans are confused. It's virtually every one of the days. So why only have it on one day? You know, I mean, there are some races that look at it going, well, if there's a reason, I mean, the dwarven race, which is not off-worlder, they're ancient race. But like they say, if you're going to have a day to have a party, why only have one? You know, why not make it 365? Yeah, you're still going to have to work during the party days, but where's the harm in that? You know, they don't, you got to remember, on the whole, the off-worlders do not have a special day, you know, for anything. Like some of the different races in different areas have a celebration because of conquest that happened or because of some major celebration, major breakthrough that they made. But that's localized. That's not on a global thing.
Okay. Definitely not FBI is asking what powers their craft, gravitational, electromagnetic, etc.
It's the oscillodensification of the tritransformational equilarity. Basically, they run off the shockwave created by loose electrons. When an electron leaves the orbit of an atom, it creates a shockwave in the energy field between atoms while it's making its way to the next atom. Now, this is just a normal, everyday, basic physical transition. But the OTE drive is run off of the shockwave created by the electrons, which is why they don't have a power shortage. Now, I'm betting that came out kind of like Swahili by the look.
Close. Either way, I mean, is it some sort of free energy?
Yes.
It's not nuclear or anything like that.
Not in the slightest. Although nuclear does make it a whole lot easier to power it up using the OTE drive. And if it makes you feel any better, in order to describe that properly, it took me about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, talking to somebody that had their master's in both rocketry and astrophysics.
Next question. Okay. Next question comes from Majdi. What is the speculation about ET languages? What is the speculations about their way of communication between them?
I'm afraid I don't understand the question.
How do they talk? How do they communicate?
Telepathic, auditory, semantic, actual linguistics, and periodically on hieroglyphics. But the hieroglyphics are usually used on a triphasic interface. Basically, what triphasic writing is you write down three separate concepts on three different sheets. You put those three different sheets on top of each other. Picture, if you will, marking three lines on onion paper. Okay. Lay them on top of each other, line them properly. On their own, they're just one line apiece. But when you line them up properly, all of a sudden you've got an A. Now, picture that with a full doctrine written out, and then lay it over top. That's triphasic writing.
Aaron is asking, is there really a blue skin race like Indian folklore says?
Yeah, they're called Pleiadian hybrids. Plus, of course, what humans called the Andorians. I'm still trying to piece together what the actual name is. What Star Trek called Andorians were blue skinned. Okay, and I do not off the top of my head remember what they were, what their actual name is. I've got it written down in volume 2. I know that because I was looking into them the other day.
All right. Greco is asking, how do I kill the entire consortium? Should have they be endangering our planet? We have no representation.
The fact he's even considering that says we're dealing with somebody highly suicidal. The entire population of the planet working together couldn't take out their main battleship, never mind the rest of it. I mean, you got to remember, the consortium's main battleship, their main gun, you take the Titanic, you turn it broadside and slide that into the barrel. At a main gun, they've still got room to maneuver. Okay, these people have planet buster technology. Like, humans are not going to get anywhere near them.
All right, let's move on. YJ is asking, what species of aliens are translucent or use translucent blue light saucer craft?
Quite often the Pleiadian hybrids will use them.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Still out there?
You going back in? There's still men out there. God damn. When I go home, people ask me, hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie? I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio. Freedomslips.com. Number one listener supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
Oh, please, Hi, Karl Marx here. I am all seriousness today, my friends. There is this show you must not listen to. The ultimate remedy with this guy, LB. This guy has figured me out. I hear it on Tuesday, and he is telling the truth. I mean lies. Stay away from this guy. Where's my good hairbrush? Anybody see my mama?
Want to learn more about the Marxist agenda and other important stuff? Listen to The Ultimate Remedy with L.B. Bork, Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution Radio.
Hour 2, next on Spaced Out Radio. I almost died laughing at Barther's question. Can aliens touch their toes without getting a mouthful of their own prick?
Where did these people come up with some of these?
That's quick? My friend. That's my friend right there. Oh, God, you're funny. Just makes me laugh. Just makes me laugh. All right, Keith, I'm gonna run away. You can chat with the audience if you want.
Well, I would. Unfortunately, I can't get into the chat room to figure out. Like, I can't even find the chat room.
Okay.
But I'm not exactly
just tell going. Tell them a story about from, like, 1987.
Yeah, I got to figure out when that was.
I'll be back.
No, the thing that people have to realize is when we are dealing with aliens, number one, we are talking about, well, I've got documented right now somewhere just in excess of 100 different races I've personally dealt with. They all have their own evolution. They've got their own roots, their own societal layout. Okay. So what we're looking at is such a wide array. Like when we start talking about the idea of reptilians doing anything, you got to understand there's at least a dozen different reptilian races that I can think of right off the top of my head. Okay. And could I give you the names right offhand? No, I can tell you what their evolutionary background is. But there are four races of reptilians that actually evolved here on Earth. And a lot of people will argue the point, and that's okay. And on that note, I'm going to walk away for a second because I have to deal with this. Sorry about that, people. That was because I was on shift and I had to log in. Now I'm not on shift. Anyway, that being said, when you're taking a look at reptilians specifically, the Chitauri originating in Africa. They have since have had colonies move over into the southern states. And I know of at least one outreach group that's gone into Antarctica and into the inner world. Okay. Then you've got three dinosaurs that literally, on top of evolving as dinosaurs, and in some cases evolving into chickens, your Tyrannosaurus Rex, your Pachycephalosaurus, and the Spinosaurus are all other races that evolved on Earth. And if you're looking for them, you'll have to go inside. You'll have to go into what people call Inner Earth or Middle Earth. Okay. That is ultimately what you're looking at. Now, as far as the number of different evolutionary paths, we got to remember that we are talking about races that have evolved over literally tens of millions of years. We are not talking about children races. Humans are only about 2 million years old from the beginning of their evolution to now. Okay, and mankind is only just barely getting their head back on straight. Now, this is the third that I'm aware of. This is the third time that mankind has made it into outer space. About 40,000 years ago, they had world peace. Those people, those people are the ones that colonized Mobius. Okay. Now, when we go back into ancient Greece, it was supposed to be such a backwards place and so technologically stunted. They had air travel, as did the ancient Egyptians. Okay. Had they lived a little longer, they would have made it into space. They made it into transportation, but, you know, into aerial transport. But they didn't make it into outer space. Now, of course, Rome was a lot more evolved than what they would like you to think, than what they would like you to know. You know, than what the human historians would like you to believe.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm still breathing. I had to put myself on pause for a half a second because my boss phoned in and I had to log in.
There you go.
So I did.
There you go. All right. We've got about a minute and a half here. Big thank you to Jeremy, Evil Carl times two, and Michael for the awesome super chats. It's a great way to support this show on a nightly basis. Thank you to all of our new subscribers out there. We really appreciate your time. Thank you. And that's about it. That's all I got. Oh, thank you to the veterans out there as well. We love you for tuning us in. So thank you for that. We got about 20 seconds.
Okay. One of these days I'm going to have to figure out how to actually get into your chat rooms because I have never been able to find them on the first button ever.
If you go to the right of the screen, there's a little box that says comments.
You're listening to Spaced Out Radio with Dave Scott. Follow Dave on Twitter at Spaced Out Radio and on Facebook, Spaced Out Radio Show.
Here we go with hour number two of Spaced Out Radio tonight. My name is Dave Scott. Thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate earning your listening ears. Welcome everyone listening in on our terrestrial affiliates around North America and digitally on TalkStream Live, Revolution Radio, and KPNL. All of our archives are free by going to youtube.com/spacedoutradio. Just do me the favor, hit that subscribe button. The Desert Clam has set the password for tonight in the SOR Space Travelers Club. Metallogeny. Metallogeny is your password. Use it wisely, space travelers, as the clam sets the password each and every night right here on Spaced Out Radio. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you, including rocking out to Bumblefoot and reading up on Captain Shirk's SOR Newswire. Follow us on Twitter at Spaced Out Radio and on Instagram, Spaced Out Radio Show. We continue on with R. Keith Andrews and the ET Connection, which happens at the beginning of every month here on Spaced Out Radio, where we take your questions from the audience, ask Keith, as he helps answer everything weird and strange. Yes, board the Woo train for this one. And Keith, we're going to start off with a question from Duke right off the bat. What about larvae from space or stars or sky jellyfish?
The answer to that question is, number one, yes, they exist. And if you give me 10 seconds, I literally had just added those to volume two. You know exactly what he's referring to. Jellyfish themselves are not exactly alien, but they are escapees, as it were. But see, no, that would be the squids. I was going to say the Udina, but those are actually more squid-like than anything else. You know, but are there organisms from outer space, the Archon, are essentially at birth they're a parasite. Okay, and they will live inside a human until they're ready to evolve. At which point they pop out of the human and carry on. They will eventually grow because they will keep taking on new hosts or taking on new form, if you will, until they can get off the planet so they can actually roam the skyways.
All right.
You know, so are they, there we go. What have we got here? Oh, yes, the Johan. The Johan are what people would call are the jellyfish type people. And their communication line is all on a subsonic and optics. They do not have a spoken language per se.
Jenny is wondering, I wonder if some aliens wear clothing.
Yes. Most wear clothing.
What's with their tight body suits?
Try that again?
What's with the tight body suits?
Usually it's because of an atmospheric adjustment. Like, especially when you look at people coming from low ground. Okay, the body suits are actually designed to keep them contained. If you're dealing with when you're dealing with the merfolk, they literally have to use them if they're going to breathe above water. They're environmental suits, in other words. You go to the Thrasazian homeworld, you're going to be, humans have to wear a body suit. The Thrasazians don't. They're quite fine with it. But the problem with that is that when you get into their atmosphere, on Earth, if we get a sandstorm will blind you temporarily. On the Thrasazian homeworld, a sandstorm will strip a human to the bone in the matter of minutes. It's a heck of a messy way to go.
All right, Big J is asking, which race of lizard people built the catacombs under Los Angeles?
Now, this is going to sound really bass-ackwards, but they didn't. Esau built them. They just utilized them. But the Thrasazians helped a lot with it. The Teklik, only a very few of them did. But most of those, as far as reptilians went, humans did a great deal of the manufacturing, as far as lining them goes. But the catacombs themselves are part of Esau's skin, if you will, or epidermis, or dermis, depending on who you talk to.
Open-minded Clarity wants to know, which race are responsible for the cattle mutilation seen across the United States?
There's a few of them, and oddly enough, I'd be inclined to say humans are part of the problem. Okay, but that being said, you will find the Teklik are known to do it, but they do it because they're after a very specific delicacy. Okay, they get in trouble when they take too many humans, so they found a substitute. Okay, but there are some, when you take a look at the vegans, they have been known to do it because they are trying to understand nervous systems. Okay, so what they do is they go after the most delicate nervous system available in order to sort it out without an overload of data. And of course, if you look at the Muldocs, well, frankly, they don't do a clean job of anything.
All right, let's move on here. YJ is asking, can you explain how your experience with the Pleiadian hybrids went?
Oh, yeah, that was the easy part. I was actually over at the Experiencer Speak Conference in 2013. And a person I was with pointed at this chap on the other side of the room, and understanding my eyes don't work that well at a distance, and really didn't then, they pointed them out and went, what's with the guy with the blue skin? And I looked at the person that asked me, and I says, which one? So she goes, the one with the white hat. I said, I don't know, let me go check. So I got up, walked straight over to the guy. I got about 10 feet from him, and I looked at him, and I stopped, and I went, are you by any chance Pleiadian? And he goes, yes. So I shifted gears. I went, well, great. I says, welcome to Earth. I said, if you're gonna show up at a place, show up at a place where you at least have a shot at being accepted. So he stuck his hand out to shake mine. And the thing is that his pigmentation moved. Like, if you've ever seen the old from back in the 70s or early 80s, they used to have these stickers that were filled with oil. You remember how you used to push on those and the oil would move all over the place?
Yes.
Same thing happened with this guy's, with the pigmentation in this guy's skin. So I, and you could feel it move, which was a really weird feeling. And I asked him, I says, can you explain how that works? So he goes, he says, I'm a shifter. He says, I can control, some of us can control our pigmentation so that we can look, so we can look normal and blend in a little easier. Now, in his case, he was with another Pleiadian hybrid, and I never did catch his name, and a Nordic, and he was also with a Nordic, which is quite normal, plus a human liaison. Well, I talked to him, and for the first year, I had the photograph. I asked if we could get a picture of him, and he goes, yes, but do not show anybody. So I'm like, okay, no problem, I won't. And I mean, you remember the conflict we had with the audience really wanting to look at that picture for the longest time.
Right.
Right. And then a year later, I went back and, well, he was there the next year. And I got his permission to actually let people see the picture. You know, but the neat part about it was a lot of people had said they dealt with off-worlders all the time face-to-face. The fascinating thing I found was that they didn't recognize him. They knew even that they were a little weird. And these guys had no concept of what physical money was. None at all. So the next morning, when we started talking down in the conference, people were saying, oh, did you see these guys? I'm like, yeah, I got a photo of them. It's like, how did you do that? I said, we asked. Right. So we showed the photo to the people that were at the event. But when I started doing the research, well, before I did the research, when this chap left, we were in a conference room inside the hotel. You had to go from the conference room to the lobby and then outdoors. I watched these four people walk out of the conference room, halfway across the lobby, and they literally dematerialized. Okay, right in front of everybody, they just faded out of existence. Now, this was such an event that even the guests that were not at the event were asking the hotel owners who the blue people were. When I did a little bit more poking around, a little bit more research, it turned out that a couple of the people had actually witnessed them coming in, showing up exactly the same way. They materialized in the lobby. Okay. Now, I was lucky the following year, that same hybrid came to the event. Okay. And then spent a week with us at the after event party. Okay. So I spent a fair chunk of time talking to him. But see, you'll never see a true Pleiadian on Earth. Because the atmosphere of a true Pleiadian of Earth will kill a true Pleiadian. But in a nutshell, that was how they did it. They can control, the ones that are brought down are trained to control their pigmentation so they can alter the coloring of it to make them look essentially human. By, you know, skeletally speaking, they're already basically human. Okay, but they alter their pigmentation so they blend in a little better. The big difference between true Pleiadians and humans are true Pleiadians have translucent skin. You can see straight through it. The hybrids, their skin is solid, so you can't see through it, but they've got control over the pigmentation. And you can literally feel it.
All right, let's move on to the next question here. Jenny is asking, R. Keith, is the military collapsing underground tunnels?
If you're asking if human military is doing it, no. But there are some underground tunnels that are being collapsed and are also being reoriented, I think is a better way to put it. It's kind of like taking out a road and putting the road elsewhere. Funny thing is, the technology they've got in the inner Earth is they can drop a city out from underneath mankind. Like, they could take an entire... Now, I forget what city DuPont's in. Okay. But they can do it in such a way that they could literally, let's say, take the DuPont factory, drop the city into a hole around it and leave it sitting on fire. If they wanted to.
Wow.
But, I mean, mankind, the only time that they collapse tunnels is, quite frankly, by ignorance and stupidity. Stupidity meaning they know it better.
Hmm.
That's a good thought. I like it.
Keith, we got to go to this question each time because there's always people who question your stories and your knowledge as being outlandish. Where do you get your information from?
First-hand experience. And the nice part about it is I question the exact same thing. But I've had enough corroboration from other people that I just gave up questioning it. You know, the reality is, you know, as far as can I give you evidence? No, frankly, I can't. Would I if I could? Yeah, depending on what evidence you were looking for. Okay, but unfortunately, all I've got is physical evidence that other people have seen that I have never bothered taking photographs of, and I'm not about to give reports to anybody or names about anybody that's seen any of it. It's just not going to happen. You know, unfortunately, yes, I realize this all sounds fantastical, and I've long held that my life is more science fiction than it is reality. Okay. But do I have physical proof? No. And if you think about the practicality of that question, if I had physical proof, when the CIA showed up on my doorstep, they'd have me locked up in some black box somewhere away, away from here. You know, that's just the way that humans would operate.
Right. Right. So for you, and for people who don't know you, I know you better than a lot of people who are listening to this show. You write down, you catalog everything that you are shown or given.
Everything that I can, yes. And this is why many of the people, when people say, do you know this race? They'll rattle off a name. And it's like, I don't necessarily know it by that name. We had somebody in here, and I forget what name they had given me. I wrote it down for reference point. But they asked me about it, and it had to do with, as it turned out, it had to do with the Wara. They knew them by a different name. But when they laid out the information they had, it was pretty black and white. That's this race. Okay, I was handed at one point, and I cannot find it amongst my electronic data. I was handed an entire file of races from the government that somebody got purportedly from the government. Many of the races that were described are named by file number. I know them by name. Now, I've been asked, well, how do I get the names? Many times, I understand what they're saying. Sometimes it's a question of trying to figure out what to call them based on the way they're behaving. Because certain languages don't translate into spoken language. You know, the Zerziks, they don't have a vocal language. Of course, they don't have a physical body to have a vocal language.
Makes sense. Makes current sense. So for you, as you are gathering your information, how much of your information is actually coming from off-world?
That depends on your definition. See, the reason I say that is because when I'm dealing with, for instance, the Swazazian race, okay, most of it comes from off-world because I went off-world to get it. Okay, some of it comes from here because I've had contact with them here. So it depends on what you call off-world and on-world. Okay, when we're talking about the Chitawari, none of it came from off-world because, well, they're not off-worlders. Okay, the Elfid race I've known for centuries. And yeah, I do mean that literally, but then, of course, I've got memories that date back that far. And yes, I did have a very logic-based individual check into the information and looked at the circumstantial evidence, and his conclusion was real simple. He goes, look, you've got enough circumstantial evidence. He says, you're not going to get physical proof, but you've got enough circumstantial evidence for what you're laying out that you could have somebody convicted of murdering somebody where the victim died 100 years before the accused was born. Right. It was actually and this sounds really bad, but it was actually a psychiatrist that discovered the first evidence of that corroborated the first evidence of being taken. My father corroborated it years later, re-corroborated it, and verified the whole nine yards on his deathbed. So no, you can't even talk to him. So much as I would love to be able to sit down and go, here is the physical proof of it, that's not possible. The only physical proof I can give people is when I talk about the speed that I can heal at, you can actually go to Penticton General. If you've got the clearance to get the information, they've got records of me healing a broken bone that they had to bolt. They had to plate it back together. I healed the whole bone in 9 days. Hmm. Now, that you can get proof if you know how to get the information. Okay. Sorry, the issue of my walking out of the morgue and getting the help to do so. Considering it happened on a military base, good luck getting the proof. And if you get it, by all means, do me a favor and pass it on to me. Because I would love the proof. All I've got is a whole pile of memories that are periodically corroborated by somebody else. Okay. Not the least of which was my vanishing off the map and my son nearly having a conniption when I didn't return right away and didn't get back until the following morning. Okay. Now, does that qualify as proof? Probably not. The problem is, I saw it posted really nicely one day that for those that believe, that the way it was put was for those that do not believe, there is no proof. And for those that do believe, there is none required. In my case, I would love to say that I'm completely off my nut. Unfortunately, I keep getting other people that turn around and go, I've seen what you're talking about or what you're talking about. I had somebody ship me photographs of a machine that they were building. And they said, I have no idea what it is. Do you? Well, I rattled off exactly what the thing was, told them why, what they had. And as it turned out, as soon as I told them what they had and how it worked, they realized why the emanations they were getting off it were wrong. They were looking for an electric pulse. And the reality was the way the item they had built worked on cross between magnetics and gravatics. Okay. It literally was part of an interstellar transporter.
Makes sense. We've got about 45 seconds to go here. I'll save Nikki's question for the next half hour because it gets a little deep into one of your own personal experiences that we have talked about, a long time ago on this show, and probably good time to bring it up once again. So I will keep a little quiet on that one for right now, for when we return from the break. But, personal experience aside, it's pretty wild what's going on right now with the UFO world. It really is. And, the one thing that we always say is, try and keep an open mind. You never know what's coming. You never know what is happening. And right now, the way everything is so up in the air, we don't know if we're going up, down, sideways, left, right, center. It's a UFO world. It's all encompassing, all confusing right now. Arkeith Andrews and the ET Connection continues on Spaced Out Radio when we return more audience questions, starting with Nikki. When we come back. All right, Keith, we're clear.
Okie doke. Gee, I think that one worked out much better than the first time somebody asked me that question.
It's all right. It's always going to be asked.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just remember the first time somebody asked me that. My reaction was, shall we say, from a radio standpoint, a little less than sociable. But that's okay. You sorted that out in a hurry yourself. Yes, no wonder I have trouble trying to... And there's the one I was looking for.
Our room's not too chatty tonight. Normally it's like really smoking busy. But then again, it is a long weekend in the U.S., so... There's the gorgeous and talented Kira. Jay Foxhunter, how you doing? The gorgeous Stephanie Jackson has returned, everyone. Jello Putin, how are you? Miata Tommy, good to see you. Smoke and Joe wants to know what both our shirts say. Mine is a jackalope. It's from the Chive.
And I was going to say that almost sounded. I just about thought Jabberwocky.
Let's see. What does yours say? Move your hand. Astrology, Pisces, good day. Can't see the rest. Hold on. Let me zoom in on you.
But,
hold it up. Hold it up.
Yeah.
Good day. Got to go a little bit higher, buddy. Insightful, adaptable, wise, extremist. Very nice.
The back of it has the bad day side of it.
Gotcha.
I got to ask just because I'm now curious. Or are you actually still there?
I'm here.
Oh, there we are. I know I've heard the term jackalope before, but I forget why. I keep wanting to think and thinking it comes from Monty Python.
It's a mysterious animal from Wyoming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You'd get along great with my brother. He plays it well.
Yeah, this one's so out of tune right now.
Well, this won't make you feel any better, but I can't tell. Of course, I swear I'm half tone deaf. Really? I didn't realize that. Yeah, the second one that's that way.
Okay. Keith, we got about 1 minute. Big thank you to G West, Jeremy, Evil Carl times two, and Michael for the amazing super chats. It's a fantastic way to support what we do here on a nightly basis on Spaced Out Radio. So thank you very much. Thank you to all of our brand new subscribers that are out there hanging on out, wondering what the hell is this all about. Well, this is our Keith Andrews in the ET Connection. Great to have all the veterans listening in tonight. We thank you for your service. And, of course, all our regulars in the chat rooms, we love you. Thank you for keeping on joining us, and we really do appreciate it. Here comes the second half of the show, starting here in 3 seconds. We passed the halfway point of Spaced Out Radio tonight. My name is Dave Scott. Thank you so much for tuning us in. Really do appreciate earning your listening ears. Want to remind you that if you've missed portions of this show or others, check out our free archives by going to youtube.com/spacedoutradio. Do me the favor, hit that subscribe button. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you, including rocking out to Bumblefoot and reading up on Captain Shirk's SOR Newswire. Follow us on Twitter at Spaced Out Radio and on Instagram at Spaced Out Radio Show. We continue on with our Keith Andrews and the ET Connection, which happens at the beginning of each month here on Spaced Out Radio, where we really rev up the woo train and get Keith, our conductor, hanging on out, driving this thing to wherever it needs to go. Keith, we're going to start with a question from Nikki here. Please talk about what happened when the U.S. government agents talked to you and tried to take you.
Well, I can't swear that they tried to take me because they certainly didn't do much of an effort on it. But they showed up on my doorstep looking for me by name. So I'm like, okay. And they asked if they could talk to me for a minute. I went, yeah. So I asked them if they wanted to come in. They said no, they wanted to go elsewhere. So I took them down to Tim Hortons. I figured it was coffee, what the heck. Went down to Tim Hortons, and the woman, when she showed up, told me she wasn't affiliated with anybody. So I'm like, okay. I mean, she was dressed, of all the things in June, she was dressed in a fur coat. You know, now that tells you somewhere where the brains were. Because I don't know about you, but if you know anything about Canada in the Okanagan in June, that is not the time to wear a fur coat. So we went for coffee, and we sat down. And no sooner did we sit down than I had my back to the wall, and she's sitting facing me. And I said, and I just looked at her. I says, "You do realize we're being watched?" Well, she gets really panicky and starts looking around the room. Who's watching us? Who's listening in? I just shook my head and went, "No, not in the room." And I pointed over my shoulder. I says, "Two blocks that way on the rooftop, they've got a shotgun mic." And she puts her hand on her throat, and she literally says, I didn't catch what she said, but she puts her hand here and muttered something. And a second later, she goes, "Are they still watching?" I said, "No, they just buggered off." So I started, you know, she was asking questions about what I knew about them. So I was telling her, I says, "If you're asking me what bases they've got," I said, I'm just plain not going to tell you. It's just that simple. Right. She goes, "That's because you don't know." I said, "Well, have it any way you want it. I'm just not telling you." Right. And so she asked a bunch of other questions, and we get through about 4 hours of this. Well, it was 2 days at 2 hours apiece. And at the end of it, she goes, "You didn't tell me anything that my government doesn't know." Now, let's remember that she told me she wasn't affiliated with anybody. She was just up here on research for her own purposes. So I just looked at her, and being subtle the way I am, I looked at her and I says, "Well, you got one of two choices." And I'll apologize to anybody listening in ahead of time, because this is not going to be very polite. Okay, I just looked at her and I says, "Look, you got one of two choices. You can either accept the fact I'm sitting on information that your government doesn't understand, or your government is stupid. Take your pick." And she goes, "You can't call my government stupid." I looked at her and I says, "Well, two things. One, I'm an English, I majored in English. I learned how. Much more importantly, welcome to Canada. I call my own government stupid. What makes you think I'm going to think any more of yours?" You know, and so she ended up, well, she took me out onto a hillside, and I told her I don't go outside and sit around outside for a reason. Well, she complained that I wasn't looking directly at her to talk to her. And I says, "I told you, take me for coffee at Tim's, and I'll relax. Out here, there is no way I'm relaxing." Quite frankly, what she did was she sat me down on top of what she didn't know, was she sat me down on top of an access portal into an underground base. I happen to know it was there, and I'm not overly impressed with it, with being out there. So she says, "You're being awful rude. You wouldn't even look at me while you were talking to me." I says, "No, but you're the one that took me out in the middle of nowhere without any way of getting back here, and I told you I don't relax out here. So if you're hoping I'm going to explain, going to apologize for it, scrap the idea. Ain't going to happen." And so did they try and abduct me? No. Okay. Did she get annoyed that I wasn't going to give her locations? Absolutely. Okay. And unfortunately, I get the same. It boils down to the same thing of, well, give me proof. See, the funny part about it is the government doesn't need proof. What they're looking for is to find out who knows what so that they can control the flow of information. And part of the restriction on the information I can certainly understand, because humans are a fearful race. Okay, they're a fearful species. Now, humans have trouble with color. Can you picture what's going to happen if you see a 7.5, 8.5 foot reptilian bearing medieval weaponry? Now, I mean, the Srasazians have a really nice way of doing it. A human mace is about 2, maybe 3 pounds of metal on the end of a stick. A Srasazian mace is the same idea, except the head of it is the size of a medicine ball. So, of course, the CIA was asking me about some of what I'd gone through. When I started listing off some of what I had seen in the underground bases, she got really quiet, and all of a sudden the conversation came to a close, which was rapidly followed by, "You haven't told me anything that our government doesn't know." Now, understand, my run-in with them, it wasn't the American military that I had to deal with. It was the Canadian one.
Right. Right. Get you. All right. Nikki's next question to you is, who were you on Atlantis?
Who was I? I was one of the rocket scientists up in the tower when Atlantis took off. The only reason I survived that was because six other people hit the wall before I did. Tell you, that was a messy day.
What do you mean, took off?
I mean, Atlantis didn't sink. That's why they haven't found it. They found little outcroppings, but if you look at the Bimini Island wrecks that they show you, mm-hmm. compare those towers that have fallen to the towers that fall on shuttle launch. Okay. What had happened was the locals at the time wanted Atlantean technology to defeat their enemies. And the Atlanteans went, you're not going to get it. Now, some of the Atlanteans wanted to pass the information on. And as such, they had set up an agreement with the locals to try and storm the front gate. Unbeknownst to them, a friend of mine who I have run into in this lifetime was working on a new power source which evolved into the OTE drive. Okay. Now, he had just barely got it hooked up when there was an explosion. Somebody had crosswired and had sabotaged it. So when he went to fire it up to actually bring the power lines on and throw the force field up around it, it detonated. And what ended up happening is the city of Atlantis, what people called the city of Atlantis, tilted at about a 40-degree angle, 30, maybe a 35, and just all of a sudden shot to orbit. Well, it did it without any warning. So the people that were walking around on the spires and the walkways ended up falling off. We lost a lot of good people that day. Okay, but the power system that my buddy had actually built, and he had built it without authorization. But the fact he got it running was the only reason we survived when we got to orbit. He didn't survive. He was right at the epicenter of the explosion. And in all fairness, when I ran into him this lifetime, he had carried with him through the next several lifetimes the fear that he had actually destroyed Atlantis. He didn't know Atlantis survived. Now, can I give you a name? No. I can't give you a name from my last life. But I do know I was actually I was one of the rocket scientists that handled the navigation.
All right, Nikki again is asking, what do you think would happen if all the abductees were to come together and marching to be heard?
Well, number one, they'd be heard. Would it have as big an impact? I would like to think so, because people working together can make a difference. And if they did it right, then at least people would come to the realization that, look, this many people from this many walks of life can't all be out of their mind. Because many abductees come from very well-placed positions. You know, very well-respected people, and they just don't talk about it because the moment you do, you get the same question, and no offense taken. I'm doing better at that. You know, the question of, well, where's your proof? Right. And considering the amount of effort that has been put into concealing the proof, it's no wonder there's a question around. But you get that many people marching together going, we are not alone. You have to start listening when you've got that many people standing there going, this is real. People the ones that are just absolutely, no, you're absolutely wrong. You could have an Aldebaran standing right in front of you and then tell you he was a human that was just in good makeup. Okay. They would look at an Udina, which is your, if you watch the movie Arrival, that's an Udina. Okay. if you know, they'd look at one of those and go, we're on really good drugs. Like, what did the government put in the air? The people that are absolutely, it doesn't exist, are not going to believe. The ones that are on the edge are going to be going, oh, well, that's either the best makeup on the planet or we've got something real going on here. And of course, you'll end up with the other problem with people that have been going, it's real, it's real. Some will go, it's real, and then the second they get faced with the reality of it, with the actual physical reality, you'll get the few that'll snap completely and just lose total focus on life. So, I mean, you're looking at a real mixed bag of what'll happen.
Makes sense.
Although I am a firm believer that if people start working together, we can actually make that sort of thing happen without the extreme negative conflicts.
Betty Boo is asking, Keith, can the elementals pass through bodies?
Well, that depends on which elemental. Okay. I mean, you don't want, the fire elemental technically can, but it leaves behind a crisp corpse. Right. The only elemental that can pass through a body without damaging the body is the spirit-based ones. Shadow-based can't get through them. The light-based will just absolutely flash fry the nervous system, as would the electrical-based. And you can picture what would happen if a magma-based elemental passed through a human body, what would happen to the human body. But no, the elementals are not non-corporeal on the whole.
All right. Let's go on here. Sean is asking, Keith, are the reptilians the controlling race?
Of who? Sorry, humans control themselves. No race is controlling the humans. If you talk to the Drakes, they want to control everybody, but they're not interested in dominating everybody. Like, they're not interested in doing it by force. The Tormenon will control the individuals that they end up buying or capturing. But Tormenon, they are mercenaries. Okay, and they buy and sell people as a way of life. Okay, so, but is there a race? I suspect that question is, who's controlling the humans? Humans control, and I will use that term very loosely, but humans control humans. None of the races do. If we go back in history, the Nordic race got here before the Consortium flagship did. And they did, and when they got here, humans looked and went, those are gods. And the Nordics, being the egocentric individuals they are, went, okay, we're gods. And they set up shop as the gods of the Norse, or they set up gods of the Norse, of the Romans, of the Greeks, by many different names. And then when the consortium rolled into the area, the consortium went, you're not gods, get out. Hence why the gods all of a sudden just seemed to vanish overnight. Was because they were evicted. Now, did they try and control mankind by, if you will, celestial influence? Yeah, absolutely. But in today's world, that doesn't happen because the consortium itself is completely against it. Because of the fact it interrupts with human evolution. And it interrupts the entire civilization, the xeno-socioeconomic, evolution of the society, which completely derails the whole idea of a research center. Basically, Earth is the biggest library in the sector.
All right, let's move on here. Let's go to Sovereign. Are the Dracos mostly amphibious and their central bases are underwater?
The Dracos are actually off-worlders. Okay, but there are reptilians that are underwater. Okay. They're just not the Drakes. Okay, when you take a look at... I'm just trying to think of the name, because there is... I can think of two or three right off the top of my head. there is, now we were talking about a shark-based waterborne, which aren't reptilian-based, but you've got the merfolk, which are not reptilian. Most of what's underwater are not reptilian, but many of them are amphib. Okay, but and yeah, they do have like the Alphid race. There is a seaborne batch of them, as well as the sirens and mermaids that actually live underwater and have complete civilizations. One right at the base of the Mariana Trench, which is a really neat place to go, but not that easy for humans to get to. And mankind doesn't have the technology to get down that far yet.
Okay, let's move on to the next one, Keith, as we got just over 5 minutes to go here. Stick with Sovereign. What are the connections between fungus and aliens and cryptids?
Well, number one, they're all sentient. You know, I was just looking at one here. What the heck is it? Spironocton? Whoop. In other direction. I'm just scanning through my research. And yeah, the Spironocton are a fungal race. Now, they didn't technically evolve on Earth. Well, there are other Spironocton on other planets that have taken on slightly different forms. But in the underground, you'll find these little guys wandering around. The Arboreans are another, if you will, I don't know if you want to call them a fungal, they're a tree race. Okay, they are walking plants. Aliens are various different races. Cryptids, in most cases, are creatures that are not, some of them are alien in configuration, others are hiccups.
All right, let's move on here. And Space Cow is asking, can you tell us more about the sky blob thing? I have 11 photos of one.
That almost sounds like what you've got is a photo of depending on how big it is, it almost sounds like she's got a photo of a Korlock. But that would be entertaining to see if she's got a picture of a large one. Usually they're only 160, 200 pounds. Mind you, that 160, 200 pounds can cover an awful pile of area. Now, she's talking about a cloud formation. She may be talking about the ionization of ship hulls, at which point they pull the atmosphere around them as a concealment fashion.
All right, Football Cat. Do Canadians celebrate American holidays? No, we have our own. We've learned from our brothers and sisters to the south that we're allowed a day off every now.
Is the truth jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio! Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio!
still out there?
You're going back in?
There's still men out there. God damn. When I go home, people ask me, hey, who? Why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie? I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio. FreedomSlips.com. Number one listener supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time.